Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. As we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, which is the only radio show focused on the impact of neonicotinoids, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will discuss this week's news. One of the things that we would like to talk about tonight concerns the EPA's decision to register a supposed new neonicotinoid alternative called flupyratofurone, which they claim is safer for bees. Tom, did I say that correctly?
I think that was a pretty good shot, yeah.
Which they claim is safer for bees. GMO mosquitoes to be unleashed in Florida. More industry propaganda. And a few other topics that hopefully we'll get to. So before we get to these topics, I'd first like to welcome to the show my good friend, Colorado beekeeper Tom Theobald. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, June.
It is evening, actually. Wow, it is. What a week.
Out here, we watch the sun march north as it sets behind the continental divide, and we sort of mark its progress as the season progresses. So the days are getting a little longer.
Well, here in New York, we were able to enjoy a little bit of sun and a little bit of the snow melting, but unfortunately, more of that white stuff is on the way as you're enjoying the weather that we're supposed to have. Go figure.
Well, we'll take it.
Now, the first topic is, this is just very interesting that this is considered an alternative to neonicotinoids when in actuality, isn't it an actual in the same family as neonicotinoids?
Well, they're claiming that it's safer for bees or safe for bees, but some very competent scientists have taken a close look at it and concluded that there are some serious questions about this new pesticide. And I think the broader concern is that the EPA seems to be repeatedly determined to interpret the evidence in a way which relieves them of their responsibilities under the law. They're doing everything they can to avoid placing any restrictions on these, and they're not protecting. And that's the greater issue. I think it's a reflection of some deep-seated corrupted management at the upper levels, and I would say that goes all the way up into Congress. There's no excuse for what's being done here, and I think flupyratofurone is a good example. It's another neonicotinoid in sheep's clothing, and we've had a series of these decisions. Prior to this, we had sulfoxaflor.
Oh, sulfoxaflor, it attacks the sap-sucking insects? And that was basically used for cotton.
So the deeper problem is not the decisions that are being made, but why they're making the decisions in the manner that they are, I think.
Now, is the process going to be the same, or rather, when it comes to the labeling, how is this going to work?
Well, the labeling is another example of their evasion of their responsibilities. They came out with label changes that they touted as being directed at the neonicotinoids. They made that specific allegation. And when, in fact, what they did was nothing. They were just an embarrassing ruse, really. It makes little sense to restrict the application of a pesticide to after sunset when it may last for years. It's nonsense. And again, I think this is gross mismanagement of an agency that is intended to protect the interests of the environment and humanity.
What I don't understand is, if the pollinators are in a state of crisis where the numbers have been declining rapidly and beekeepers as well as environmentalists are trying to do everything that they can to protect all the different species, why is it that they keep approving one toxic chemical after the other when the only party that stands to gain is industry? It just doesn't make any sense. You would think that the primary focus would be on protecting these species, and that just does not seem to be the case ever.
Well, the critics of the EPA would say that they are the agents of industry, not the agents of the people. And I think there's a great deal of evidence to support that allegation. Nobody seems to be holding them to account. For a number of years, they used the dodge of the conditional registration, and that's the issue in question with the clothianidin, one of the major neonicotinoids. The allegation is that it has never met the correct requirements for registration, and yet it has remained on the market. Well, the EPA was called to account about the abuse of the conditional registration process. Hundreds, thousands of chemicals were approved that way. Some conditions were insignificant, others were very significant, and there was little or no tracking. Many of the conditions were never satisfied. But when the EPA was discovered and held to account, what they did was they just bypassed that little ruse, and they approved the chemicals right out of the box. And sulfoxiflor was the first example of that. Had they had a conditional registration of sulfoxiflor, naturally there would have had to be conditions. And those conditions now, because of greater awareness, would have been tracked very closely. Well, they didn't want that. So what they did was they just gave sulfoxiflor a full registration, despite the fact that there were many, many unanswered questions about its dangers. And the same appears to be true of fluffy ratifurone. They have cherry-picked the evidence to support their approval of a product that appears to be just another neonicotinoid, whatever they call it. It has the same action. It affects the same synapses. It's another attempt to mislead the people.
Obviously. What I think is also interesting is the description that is given as well with this notice. It's safer for bees than what? I just think that it's kind of interesting, the language that they choose to use. They
safer
dodge
for bees than a California brush fire or something like that. It's not safer for bees. The evidence is that it's not appreciably different than many of the other neonicotinoids. It's very, very toxic and never should have been approved.
Well, they keep approving these chemicals, and it just does not make any sense that this is still something that's going on, especially with all of the exposure that these actions have been given. But the fact of the matter is that there are so many problems with the pollinators. What are they going to do when this backfires? Who are they going to blame for this one? That'll be an interesting situation.
Well, I think it's mismanagement by the beekeepers. We just, after 40 years of beekeeping, I've just suddenly become a dumb beekeeper and I don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, they'll blame it on someone.
Well, they'll say, well, that seems to be their all-purpose excuse. to say that you have no clue as to what you're doing, even though you, like so many beekeepers, have been managing hives for generations in some case. It's a broken record, and it's about time that they come up with the new song, because this is just, it's just preposterous at this point. The fact that they are allowing this to go through without any type of intense research as far as different species, it's something's got to give, Tom. I mean, we've been talking about this for how many years? And it's the same thing every single year. We're now in a new year. It's 2015. What has changed?
Nothing's changed. It's just gotten worse. One of the recent developments is a musician and sound recorder. For 40 years, has been recording the sounds in the natural environment, and has found that there's been a dramatic decrease in the sounds that constitute the environment. Insects and birds and amphibians and everything. And the reason is the environment is being devastated. You know, we're getting more and more evidence of what the consequences of the misuse of these chemicals is. And I want to say here, I'm not one of these zealots that believes that we have to get rid of all chemicals.
I'm not either.
That isn't going to happen, but we have to get rid of the worst of them. And we're facing the worst of them.
Well,
they need to be removed from the market.
I couldn't agree more. Now, I just want to skip down to section 2.2 in this EPA document. It's page 10. Tom, if you can open that up, it's the overview of proposed uses. And it says, Floopy ratifurone has proposed foliar uses on crop group 15 cereal grains, except rice, cotton, non-grass animal feeds, forage fodder, straw, hay, peanut, root vegetables, except sugar beet, tuberous, and screen messed up. Leafy vegetables, it goes on and on and on. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is going to just affect a whole bunch of different foods that people consume, frequently. And it'll be interesting to see how this affects the organic industry, especially if this is going to be used on such a broad scale.
Well, it appears to me that the organic industry is an endangered species, because these chemicals are being used so widely and are so mobile. They're water soluble. They migrate with the rainwater, the groundwater. They go everywhere. You know, once again, I'll refer to the U.S. Geological Survey study that was done of 9 Midwestern watersheds, and they found these neonicotinoids in every sample that they took, and at killing levels in some. Where do you practice organic agriculture under those conditions?
I don't even see how it's possible. Now, this is also an interesting part. One of the products is Savanto. It says Savanto is proposed for application to agricultural crops, get this, before bloom, during bloom, or following bloom up to the stated pre-harvest interval. So the bees really don't have a chance. I mean, as it is, when they do the foliar applications, we've seen how many instances where there's so many bee losses.
I'd like to remind the listeners, though, that as important as the bees are to me personally and to all of us, the bees are just a symptom of what's going on. This devastation has extended to a broad range of life forms at the lower end of the food chain, freshwater invertebrates, lack of insect populations and contaminated insect populations have affected the bird life. It's not just the bees. This is a much, much broader question before us. And what we're getting are excuses and evasions and avoidances, and nobody seems to be in the driver's seat beyond the corporations.
Thank you, Tom. Now, the next topic that really has a lot of people upset, I mean, that's putting it mildly, is the news about the mosquitoes, GMO mosquitoes that are to be released in Florida.
Yeah, this is a mosquito that, how does it work? It carries a gene from hepatitis C. Is that what, do you recall that, June?
It says, let's see, there's an article on Fox News from
Sterilizes the females that it breeds with.
Yeah,
one of the two.
Well, it says, millions of genetically modified mosquitoes could be released in the Florida Keys if British researchers win approval to use the bugs against two extremely painful viral diseases. The bottom line is that we have so many issues where they keep spraying and doing this and doing that, basically because they keep screwing up.
Well, they haven't instilled a lot of confidence in us. I'll admit to that. The question, as I understand it, with the mosquito is that they will sort these out only for the males, all right? And the males don't bite people. The females are the ones that bite people. They need that protein source, that blood protein, so that they can develop their eggs. Well, they say that they are going to sort these so that only the males are released. However, about 3% will be females. About 3% will pass through this sorting process. And the question is, if they carry a hepatitis C gene and they bite people, what are the consequences of that? Are there none?
Well, why don't they let the genie out of the bottle?
Has been done? I don't think it has, from what I've been able to see. And once the genie is out of the bottle, there's no stuffing it back in again.
That's basically what we're in for. I mean, the bottom line is they're introducing a species that's not part of the natural world. And, yeah, you'd better believe that once they do this, they don't know what the implications are going to be, what the ramifications are going to be. And this is scary. This is like a spin-off Jurassic Park, only with mosquitoes. It just this whole thing is so surreal. It's hard to believe that this is happening in this day and age.
This is like giving a devilish child a chemistry set so that they can blow the house up.
I think it's a little bit worse than that, but...
Well, certainly it is. You have to question what's going on here, and one of the obvious conclusions is that the only objective is money.
Well, the bottom line, Tom, is when you kill the predators of the mosquitoes, the frogs, the birds, all the other species that eat the mosquitoes, what else are they going to do? They're going to come up with something else that's going to make the money so that they can continue to profit while they're crying that they need to do something. It's just like the creation of GMOs because they need to feed an ever-growing population. Yeah, that is brilliant propaganda because people die every day.
The mosquito thing is a done deal, though, isn't it? Hasn't the decision been made? I think it has.
I don't know if it's been 100% approved. I know that they're carefully considering it, but they've approved GMO mosquitoes elsewhere. But this has just been just the thought that they're this close to approving it. It's like living in a horror story.
you read the article about the decline of the natural sounds?
Yeah.
There's a new book called The Great Animal Orchestra, and a musician and naturalist by the name of Bernie Krause has recorded natural environments for 40 years, and what he is observing is a dramatic decline in those natural sounds. And there's more evidence. I mean, we count the monarchs. We see the dead honeybees. We see the colonies that have been lost. We know there are fewer birds. But who would think that we're silencing nature?
Well, look at how many species are going extinct, Tom.
Well, that's certainly one of the conclusions. Either that or Bernie Krause is losing his hearing.
Yeah. Ha-ha.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of excuses we would get.
Well, this is, this is not something that just pertains to pollinators. You're talking about the lion population, the tiger population, the rhino population, the elephant population. Recently, there was a ban that was actually legislation that was passed in the state of New Jersey, which prohibited the sale or purchase of ivory and rhino horns. And that actually pushed New York to go forward with a full ban as well. But the bottom line is that that's just two states. We need more aggressive legislation in place throughout the United States and in other countries. It's a global problem. It's not just our problem here. It's not just their problem wherever there may be. It is a global problem. Once they're gone, that's it. You know, in the Bronx Zoo in New York City, there's a section where it's in the bird sanctuary. And I remember visiting there maybe about 2 years ago with my nephew. And we saw these descriptions of different birds that are now extinct. And he pointed out there were some descriptions, but no images. And he said to me, you know, Aunt June, nobody's ever going to know what these birds look like because, you know, they were extinct so long ago. What's going to happen when more and more species are added? Now, what about future generations? And he's absolutely right. What about future generations?
Yeah. The article about the decline in the natural sounds is a follow-up to an article that appeared about a year and a half ago, and it was initiated by a photographer who'd taken a square foot framework and put it in a variety of environments and then counted and photographed the species that were in and or passed through that square foot. And he got hundreds of plants and thousands of insects and all sorts of things. And Robert Krulwich of NPR followed up on that, and they did a similar experiment in an Iowa cornfield, and they found virtually nothing. It's what many people have come to call the green desert, sterilized of everything but the commodity crop, in this case corn.
Unbelievable. But you know, this is what we're up against. This is basically what the science is telling us is in store. This isn't conspiracy theory. This isn't your opinion or my opinion. This is what the peer-reviewed, independently conducted research that has been published, and numerous studies that have been published, should I say, have been saying. So, unfortunately, this is what we will see if the powers that be that are in charge of protecting the different species, as well as our own, don't step up to the plate and do something.
Well, the powers that be are determined to do just what they're doing. And it's clear, I think, from the evidence that Congress intends to do nothing. And I've said many times, for beekeepers, and it is the same for these larger issues, we have no power other than the power of public opinion, and people need to inform themselves and begin to demand performance from these agencies that they pay and expect to protect their safety, because that's the only thing that's going to change the direction of this tanker. If the public becomes aware enough and active enough to demand that this stop, I don't see any other way to change it. I see nothing coming from Congress.
Well, we'll see what happens. The year is, we're still early in the year, and we'll see if there's any change that actually is going to make a difference, if anything at all. But we're almost out of time. And, Tom, I'd like to just take a moment to talk about another topic, which is elm tree scale insects.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And we just found out about that a few days ago. It initially, at least, it may be appropriate more to Colorado beekeepers in the Colorado environment, but probably applies all across the country. And what was found is that these elm trees have been treated with neonicotinoids for a number of years, unbeknownst to anyone but the people who were doing it. But what has happened is it has killed a predator of the scale insect. And as a consequence, the scale insect has exploded. Now, the reason this has an importance for the bees is that, first, the repeated treating of a tree like that has most certainly contaminated the environment at some unknown level for a wide range over many, 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 many acres, because elm trees are very common. The second is elm trees, many of the elm trees bloom very early when pollen is in short supply. The bees need that pollen as a protein source for their babies, for their larvae. So they exploit those trees very heavily. More interesting, though, is the fact that these scale insects produce honeydew, a sweet substance. People are probably aware of parking under an elm tree and getting this dripping on their cars. That's the honeydew. Well, in times of shortage, bees will exploit that source, and they will harvest that honeydew, and that's another vector for them to be exposed to these systemic pesticides. That's of great concern, I think, not only to Colorado beekeepers, but for beekeepers all across the country. Before we close, June, I'd just like to acknowledge the passing of a good friend of mine, beekeeper Paul Hendricks. Paul had about the same number of years in beekeeping as I did, and he and I had worked together on these pesticide issues going all the way back to the PenCap years of the early 90s. And Paul was a passionate, animated, concerned beekeeper and always prepared to stand up for the interests of the bees and the beekeepers. And he finally lost the battle to cancer, and we knew toward the end what was coming. And I'm certainly going to miss him, and I think unknowingly he will be missed by the broader beekeeping community as well.
Well, Tom, I'm very sorry for your loss, and for those of you that knew him, you know, it's always sad when you lose somebody who's been a very strong advocate.
Yeah, he was a great comrade in arms, and we fought some great battles together.
Well, my deepest sympathies to his family and also to you, Tom.
To his wife, Linda, and his daughter, Joanna, yes.
Well, thank you for taking the time to share with the listeners a little bit about one of your dear friends and, as you said, comrades. It's always sad. But in any event, Tom, we are out of time. I just want to say thank you for joining me tonight and, you know, to be continued.
Good night, June.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Tune in to our next show next Thursday as Tom and I continue the discussion about neonicotinoids on the only show that focuses on neonicotinoids. And we will see what happens next. Have a great evening, everyone.